on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday, July 24th edition of InvestTalk. And each and every Friday, our premium newsletter is published, and we send that out to subscribers, email boxes this morning. And I always like to, on a Friday, give you a little overview of some of what's in it. In the current market conditions, which is the first sections, I talked about earnings this week that dominated the news. Did you notice? The earnings that we reported on the big tech companies were better than expected. But don't think that that was great news, because what was expected was reduced all quarter long, and where the expectations are pretty low, but they were better than expected. I talked about the market and what it's really fearing, because this week we had a down week, after an up week last week, strong up week last week, strong down week this week. What's the market really fearing out there? It certainly isn't the earnings or the economy. That's not what it's fearing. So I talked about that a little bit, and it's pretty much the interest rate, what the Fed's going to do. In the next section, which was the more, which is more a popular feature, we had a couple stock ideas. That section always has a couple of stock ideas. And I put a little light on the third-party logistics provider and an asset management services company. That's the two that were in there. Our third section is about portfolio management, and I talked about the mutual fund industry. And it gets a bad rap, but is one of the rare successful examples of financial innovation that has been around for a long time. And that's in a world where there's a lot of investment products are just bad. Mutual funds have been very good, as a financial product. Anyways, and how do you find a good one? That's always the problem. And I talked on the Consumer Watch this week. I talked about credit card usage for renting a rent-a-car and what is covered for the damages done to a rent-a-car if you got in an accident. Just to let you know, just a little. American Express has the best coverage out there, it looks like to me. So that's what's in the newsletter that went out this morning. It goes out every Friday. It's $10 a month. Comes out every Friday. Now it's time to get your voice in on the program. Remember, you can talk to us live, 4 to 5. Talk to me live, 4 to 5 Pacific Time on InvestTalk, Monday through Friday. But if you can't, you still can call, and we call it the listener line and leave your question. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
I have two questions, non-stock questions for you. The first, real quickly, would be on a recommended reading, either a daily or weekly. Is there a newspaper or is there a magazine that you recommend? I'm new to this game. I'm more for learning purposes. The second question is more of a general market question. I'm sure that you guys have been through some downturns before. Are we in a different marketplace, though, globally? There's more millionaires today than there've ever been. There's more globally people investing. Do you see this as a, maybe you can comment a little bit on if this is a different panic downturn, or is everything just cyclical and this just happened?
Okay, excuse me. Answering the first question, reading. If you're looking for economic news, I do like the Economist, the magazine called The Economist. If you're just looking at newspapers, I like Investors Business Daily and Wall Street Journal. I read those two every day, and The Economist. On the web these days, there's Yahoo Finance and MarketWatch.com. These are all very good information providers, if that's what you're looking for, and that's all free. So that's where you can go. The market. The market is the market, and there's not much difference than it was 1 year ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. Different players have different influences on it, but no one controls the market. No one does. And investors, professionals, as well as amateurs, always get it wrong and always get it right at different times. You might want to go to Investor's Almanac, and it talks that book is really good because it talks about the seasonality of stocks and, you know, historical patterns, and they really don't change much. You know, there's always sector rotation. Right now, commodities are getting hit pretty hard, probably overdone by now, probably. But it's always cyclical. Something's going on in the cycles. It's pretty common and pretty routine. So don't think anything is all that much different because money is concentrated in just a few hands. Well, you know, 50 years ago, there was no 401ks. You know, IRAs, those are all new. So that's putting money into individuals' hands. There's more individual investors than there has been, even though it peaked probably in 2008, you know, and then fallen off in individual investors. But, you know, there's different things. In the roaring 20s, when the market crashed in 1930, you know, there was a lot of margin on people borrowing money. Regular folks and professional folks. Now we have controls over that. You know, so there's, you know, you can't really. Good question, but no one controls the market. It's uncontrollable. Look at what China's trying to do. Who, you know, remember the Chinese government really likes to have a heavy hand, and they couldn't control it. And I have a talking point I want to discuss that I wasn't going to mention yesterday. I want to make sure I get it done today. The chairwoman of the Federal Reserve, repeated again recently that the Fed is on track to raise short-term interest rates later this year. What higher interest rates would mean to you? What will it do? If the Federal Reserve raises rates, what does that mean to you? That's going to be one of our talking points today. I want to, again, yesterday I didn't get to it, but I will today. China's intervention is working, intervention in their market. But at what cost is it working? What are their interventions? What are they doing? If you've been watching the Chinese market, I'll go over that and tell you what that's all about. New home sales came out today. New home sales. Lowest pace in 7 months. Is that something that we need to think about and worry about? And will the commodity crisis affect, in fact, stocks? Will commodity prices, the fall crisis, will that affect stocks? Well, let's look at the history. Has it done it before? It did it in 2008. Remember when the market crashed? Commodity prices fell first. Well, and then the stock market fell. But is that normal? Should we expect it this time? And I have some stats I can share with you on that. So those are the things we're going to discuss. But of course, whatever is on your mind comes first, not what I want to talk about. I like talking about different things. But what is on your mind? The market today fell 163 on the Dow, down 58 on the NASDAQ, and down 23 on the S&P 500. The gold prices were down sharply in the morning and then recovered by the end of the day. Now, we know commodity prices have been falling. Gold has been falling. The question is, did we have an exhaustive sell-off in gold? Have we seen it in the stock prices? It's very interesting because we had a week ago Friday, I was talking about, well, we had a pretty strong week. The market was up strong this week. Now today, 1 week later, we've had a pretty weak 5 days in the market. Market's down strongly this week. Where are we for the year? Weak. We're not up. We're not down. The NASDAQ is a little bit up. The S&P is down. The Dow is down more than the S&P for the year. So the stronger part of the market has been the NASDAQ because their earnings were stronger. But does that mean the market is really up? No. The overall market is down for the year so far. And it still is down. We are stuck in a range. And so now it looks like we're on another down leg down to the bottom of the range. The question is, are we going to get a deeper correction than we've seen? The little correction we have was, you know, 3% pretty for the year anyways. Pretty weak, pretty small corrections, and then the market would go up and then back down. And that's what we've seen all year. So it's been kind of not a very fun year. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing you could say good about it for the year. I do think, and I'll say it again, and I've said it before, I do think we're going to have a rally toward the end of the year. I do. Once the Federal Reserve has finally raised the rate, then I think the market will finally be used to it and not worry about it so much. And that's what I think is the problem. The market is worried about what the Fed's going to do. Now, they know the Fed's going to raise the rates. That's, you know, they're pretty sure that's going to happen. They don't know when. They don't know how much. Well, I can tell you this. It's probably a quarter point and then pause, and it'll probably come in December. That's my estimate. Now, I've been saying that for a while now. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it is. But the market is still not sure. They're unconvinced. And I don't think they're going to be convinced until the Fed actually does raise the rate. And then there might be some pressure off of the market because it's a fact instead of a rumor, which is what we're doing now. Remember that old saying, buy the rumor, sell the news? Well, this is, don't buy the rumor, but there's a rumor out the interest rate's going to go up, so don't buy it in the stock market. And now sell the news. I think we're just having the reverse of that. You know, when you get the rumor, you finally have that uncertainty. When you get the actual increase of rates, you have that uncertainty behind you. I think the market will like it. We talk about risk all the time here on the show. And that plays a part in every money decision we make, every money decision you make, not just investing. How much risk? Can I afford this new car? Can I afford this new house? Should I buy it? You know, how much risk is it? Is my job secure? So managing your risk has a lot to do with your own personal capacity to have or to carry the risk. If you haven't tried our free risk analysis tool, why not? It's kind of interesting. It's there for you on investtalk.com. Have a question? 888-99-CHART is how you reach me right now on This is Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve. This is Rich in Fort Worth. I listen to you on podcast, and I wanted your opinion on TD Ameritrade as a core holding. I own a sizable stake in it, and I'm waiting for a pullback to acquire some more. If we begin to see interest rates rise, the relationship with TD Bank could provide an increase in earnings from their margin accounts that they hold. What is your take on ticker symbol AMTD and its long-term basis? Thank you.
Well, I think TD Ameritrade Holdings Corporation is a good company, a very good company. It's a $20 billion company. It's not small. Provides securities brokerage services, technology-based financial services through the internet and branch networks. I don't think that's going to disappear. I think it's going to be around for the stay long-term. So, because he's talking about a core holding, everybody. The only disappointment about the company I have is it only pays a 1.6% dividend yield, and I like my core holdings to pay a little bit more than that. Earnings are going to continue up $1.42. They made $1.42 a share last year. They're going to make $1.47 this year. Not a lot, up 4%. And next year, they're scheduled to make $1.79, which is a 22% increase. Sales have been kind of weak, still growing, but in the single digits the last three quarters or so. Before that, they were growing 12%. You know, a year ago, they were growing between 10 and 20% in sales. So sales have slowed, and it's a little bit of pricing, but great return on equity of 17%. P is 25. That five-year range is 12 to 27. So, you know, it's a little high. Not much debt. Management owns 1%. Mutual funds are net buyers, and the stock has been doing pretty good for the year, This stock is about flat, a little bit above the line, but about flat. But that's the whole market, isn't it? So I like it as a holding. I think it's a good company. I'd wait for, if the market gives us a correction, I'd probably be a buyer of it then as opposed to now. I would like to see you buy core holdings with better dividends. That would be my suggestion. You know, AMTD, TD Ameritrade Holdings. I have a date with our listeners in San Jose. I'm meeting with individuals for a portfolio checkup. It's on August 4th in the Bay Area. If you want to meet with me, you can schedule a meeting by going to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. Right now, on this July 24th, we're ready to take any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART is how you can get to me right this minute. We'll talk to Bill in Petaluma next, and then you.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Why own an investment that can lose double-digit returns while having the potential to gain very little? The interest rate risk for today's retiree. That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk on Monday's podcast.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Bill in Petaluma. How you doing, Bill? I want to talk about British Petroleum. How you doing?
Yes. Happy Friday to you, Steve. Yeah, I would like to get your insights on BP and if we find out from you if we might be near an entry point.
I think we are. I think anybody who's interested in getting into oil, big oil, right, we're seeing an opportunity here that I think long term, in hindsight, you're going to say, man, I should have bought it way back then. Okay? I'm not thinking oil is going to skyrocket or anything like that. Not at all.
Right.
I'm just saying that oil is probably, Bill, getting close to where it's going to settle. You know, between $40 and $50, maybe $60, between $40 and $60, it's going to settle in there. And these big integrated companies, they're going to make money in that area. They're going to make money. British Petroleum, while you're waiting for it, pays a 6.5% dividend, and I don't think they're going to cut the dividend. They have plenty of cash flow to pay that dividend. Sales are going down, you know, the last quarter, just like every major oil company. But earnings are starting to stabilize. They're going to make $2.46 this year and then $2.73 next year. And that's coming off some much better years. But the stock has fallen down to $36.57. It's been at $35 a couple of times and in this area in the last year. And it seems to want to bounce off of this area. Now, Bill, just in case it goes lower, I wouldn't buy it yet. I'd like to see it bounce at least a little bit before you consider it. And I think it's going to bounce pretty soon. It looks like it's oversold to me. Okay?
Gotcha. Thank you.
I like it.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. Thank you. I'm liking, you know, big oil. I'm kind of liking it. I mean, if you just sat on it, you'll make 6.5% a year in dividends. Now, can they cut the dividend? Yes. Have they cut the dividend? No. You know, big oil, they're going to maintain their dividends. They want to maintain those dividends. I mean, it's something that they are, that's one of the things that attracts people to them. And I might be early, but I still like big oil. I kind of like it. If you're patient, it'll work. If you're like trying to guess at a bottom, it's hard. It's almost impossible to guess a bottom. I don't know what the bottom is. I don't know where it is. I just think it statistically, it looks like it's getting awful close. Okay, so what happens when the higher interest rates? The Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, has said, yeah, we're on schedule to raise rates this year. What rates are they talking about? It's not talking about the interest rates of your mortgage or your car loan or your mortgage or credit card. They don't control. The Federal Reserve, our government, has nothing to do with those rates. They have nothing to do with the rates the bonds are charged. The treasury bonds, private corporate bonds, junk bonds, they have no say in any of those rates. So what rates are we talking about? What say the Federal Reserve has say on the overnight rate it lends to banks. So when a bank wants to borrow money from the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve charges them an interest rate. Right now, it's pretty much zero. Now, the Fed is going to raise rates. When they say they're going to raise rates, they're going to raise it probably 0.25% sometime this year. Probably late, not the next meeting, which is next week. That's not happening. The meeting after that is in September, as possible. Then they have another meeting like in December. That's probable. But they're going to raise rates to 0.25%, maybe. But in the next meeting, will they raise them again? We don't know. I think that they might be one and done for a while, but we'll see. They're raising rates for what reason? There's no inflation. The economy's not that strong, but they're raising rates because it's so low. What happens to you when they raise the rates? Well, the Federal Reserve raising rates does impact other institutions of what they're going to do. They generally follow suit. With the Federal Reserve raising rates, they may raise rates. But you'll already seen mortgage rates have already started to creep up a little bit before they raise the rates. And because they're anticipating it. It's going to raise the rates, so they're trying to get ready for that. Will it affect you? Well, the mortgage rates are going up. Car loan rates will probably go up, but small, really small. Remember, there's competition to try to keep them low. Credit card rates probably won't change. They'll stay the same. They're already really high. Bond rates, I think the rates of bonds, corporate bonds, junk bonds, the rates will probably increase. But those are more related to supply and demand issues, not what the Federal Reserve does. So, what should you worry about? Should it be something on your mind? No. I say no. And if you're in the market for a house, will the mortgage rate go up? Well, once they raise the rates, I don't see the mortgage rates going up very much because I think that they're already anticipating. I think the rates will be already up when the rate actually happens. It's what, 4%? I don't even know exactly what it is right now. But I don't think it's something that you should worry about. It's not going to affect you personally. Now, do you have a floating rate in your mortgage right now? Yeah, that could affect you a little bit, but it won't be much. Coming up in the next half hour, InvestTalk Personal, should you get a rate lock on your upcoming mortgage? Kind of related to what we're talking about. Should you do that? I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. Our number is 888-992-4278. Everybody worries about, should I lock in my rate when I buy a house? We'll talk about it here on InvestTalk. Chart. Let's get it right back to answering some questions, okay? Our phone number is always open. Phone number is always open to your question, always. Whether you're new to investing or you just have a more complex question, that's okay. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. I am a podcast caller from New York. Thanks to you guys, I have become a better investor, so thank you. However, one of my biggest weaknesses is deciding a good time to sell. I bought AFOP, which is Apple Frank Open Peter, at 1772 for the strength of their management, financials, and future prospects. This was bought as a one-year or less trade and not a long-term core holding. Well, the management came through, and now I'm trying to reevaluate. Can you tell me what you think? I am trying to decide if I should sell some, hold on, or just take profits and buy something nice for my wife. Thanks very much. You have a great show. I've been listening to you for about 3 years now. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you for the nice words. Thank you for the compliments and great listening. Allianz Fiber Optic. It's a small cap company, $375 million. Manufactures connectors, adapters, multiplexers, splitters, and couplers for the telecom equipment and service providers. They make money, have been making money every year for a lot of years. They made, even in recession, they still made 9 cents. Today, this year, 2015, they're going to make $1.25 per share. Next year, $1.38 per share. That's a 10% increase. Next year, a 7% increase. This year, sales have been a little tough, but they're starting to improve. The problem is that it's a little expensive. They don't have any debt. Good, solid company. PE is around, they're selling for $21. They're going to make $1.38 next year. So, that's about 15, 16 PE. That's what the market is normally. They have so what I'm saying is this looks like a good, solid company. Remember, you said you bought it for a short-term trade. And if it was me, I would put a stop. And that's what you do if you want to, you still think it might go up, but you want to lock in profits, put a stop in. A stop. What kind of stop? How low should it be? Well, I'm looking at the chart. I think if it was me selling for $21.16 and you want to lock in your profits, if it dropped below, I'm going to say $20, if it ever gets down there, I would sell it. And I would follow it up. If it kept going up, I would just keep rising. Now, if you, depending on how much money you have invested, hopefully it's not a lot, you might take just some profits, sell half your position so that you know that you're locking in some money. But follow it up with a stop. If it was a core holding, which I wouldn't do, this is too small of a company, it would never be a core holding, then you wouldn't care about this wiggles and waggles. But in this case, I would probably just have a good stop. Now, what is a core holding, everybody? That is something like a big blue chip stock that pays a nice dividend, and you plan on holding onto it for the next 10 years, 20 years. Don't plan on doing anything with it. You want to buy those things when they're cheap and just hold on to them. And that's why we were talking earlier about oil. You know, there's some big blue chip oil companies that have come way down in price, which maybe would be considered core holdings. And you want to buy those when everybody else doesn't want them. That's when you buy them, when no one else wants them. You know, it's a big blue chip company. It's going to be around forever. You know it's not going to go out of business. You know it's going to pay its dividend. And you buy it and then put it in a drawer and ignore it. But you want to buy it when they're on sale. That's what a core holding is. A big blue chip stock you're going to hold forever. Generally pays a very nice dividend. Has some growth, but you know, consistent long-term growth, usually in single digits, not a big grower, in a good solid industry. Okay? Now, the 888-99-CHART is our number. I want to talk about the Chinese market. We know that the Chinese market went up really big in the last year or two. Then in early in July, their market came down 30% or so, most of the indexes, Chinese indexes. And the Chinese government kind of panicked about it. And they announced 40 different measures to try to prop up the market, including cutting the interest rate, trying to stabilize the market. They even set up a stabilization fund to buy stocks outright, a 5 trillion won to do that, to buy the stocks, government buying the stocks to hold up the market. And it looks like it kind of stopped it from falling, is trying to hold up. Is this a good thing? The answer would be no. The Chinese is intervening in the market. Japan tried to do this with their currency for years and years and years. Eventually, it won't work. If you are trying to be a world market for investors to invest in, which China is trying to do, government intervention is going to cause people, professional investors, institutional investors, to shy away from it because they don't know what you're going to do. They don't know how you're going to intervene. And it's not a free market in that case. So it doesn't give them confidence to invest in the market. You would think it would be just the opposite. But see, institutional investors, smart money people, know that governments can't control any free market mechanism. They can't control it. They can influence it, but they can't control it. And these measures, these 40 different measures, makes it confusing what they're doing. They don't, you know, remember, investors are kind of a conservative group of people, institutional investors especially. They want certainty. And you having different rules because the market's falling, or different rules because the market's going up, and changing rules in the middle of the horse race doesn't give them confidence. So I don't think it's a good idea. And I think it's going to backfire on them eventually. How and where and when, I don't know. But I this is not a good idea. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. We try to be a source of straight talk about money. I really do. I welcome any and all money questions. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can reach it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you have a call between 4 and 5 Pacific time, I'm live right now. We can have a conversation. And that number is the same, 888-992-4278.
The first step is to learn how much risk you feel comfortable with. Then Steve and Justin can tell you if your current portfolio matches. Our free risk analysis tool is there to help you. It asks simple questions and takes just maybe 5 minutes or less. It's there for you right now on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. I have a quick question regarding Qualcomm and ARM Holdings. Qualcomm especially has gone down a lot in the last few days. Wanted to have your idea whether it's a good buy, both Qualcomm as well as ARM Holding, ARMH, related to the mobile market that they address, basically. Thank you.
Qualcomm, QCOM, Qualcomm, big blue chip company, $100 billion company, looks pretty secure. I read a couple of articles today about Qualcomm and their problems, And I think their problems are just beginning. So I would be very cautious about Qualcomm. 50% of their income sales come from Asia, China in particularly. And China, of course, is trying to encourage their own standard, Qualcomm design CDMA-based power management and chips. And Asia, they're having trouble, recently settled a Unfair Trade Practices Act with China. Now Korea's accusing of that. The European Union, the EU, is looking into unfair trade practices by Qualcomm. As a big company, you're always targeted, right? I mean, that's just what it is. So I think they're going to have a big headwind. I think their sales are in the single digits, have been for some time, but now, the most recent quarter, sales fell 14%. I think competition has started to eat some of their lunch, and therefore, the dividend's 3.1. Therefore, I would say the weakness in the stock might continue. It's $61. They're going to make $4.74 next year, 2% more than this year, but that's down 8% from last year. I'd be very cautious about Qualcomm at this point. I'm not sure they're done falling, so I think you need to wait. The high that they've had is been 74 in 2013. And then it was 81 in 2014, and here it is 61 now. The lows are in their 50s. So I think it could still go down a little bit. I would be cautious with Qualcomm. It's a good company, great company, but they're having a lot of problems with countries attacking them. Not unusual. Time for Invest Talk Personal, the daily choices we make that can have lasting financial impact. Should you lock in your mortgage rate when you're house hunting? If it could drive you nuts, with a mortgage rate, trying to lock in the rate just at the right time. It's almost impossible. You don't want rates to go down after you lock it in, because that will really tick you off. But here's the thing. You're never going to get it right. You're never going to get it just right. Just go find the house that you want to live in, okay, that you can afford, and then go find the rates and try to lock it in, okay, at that time. Don't try to lock it in beforehand, because then you're pressured to find a house. You don't want to be pressured in buying a house. And something else that's smart to do, give yourself some perspective. Check out how rates have fluctuated over the last 30 years. The rates are really low at 4 and 4.5%. That's low. My first house, I paid 12.25%. My first house. And I thought that was a good rate. So the rates are still very low. So if you're buying your dream house, go buy the dream house, then go lock in your rate. Okay? Sometimes sales get delayed. Maybe you can't close right away. Your rate you'd locked in will expire. Also, try to get that rate locked in writing. Because, sometimes they tell you a rate and it's not really what the rate is when you finally close. So be careful. You might only get that rate agreement in writing. That's Invest Talk Personal. There's a link to a related article under our talking points on investtalk.com. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask it, and we'll play it on the next program. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is David from Tri-Cities, Washington, and I heard about the program. I was searching through podcasts on iTunes, and I was wondering, how do you guys feel about gold? A year ago, I maxed out my Roth IRA, and this year I'm not going to be doing that because all the money that was going to go into my Roth this year is now going to be going into commodities such as gold and silver, and I was just wondering how you guys feel about that.
I don't like you putting all your money in any one thing. You want to manage the risk of your portfolio, so you want to spread it out. Having some gold now that everybody hates it might be a good idea, but not a lot. Don't put all your monies in the one basket. It's just too difficult to know. Picking a bottom is very, very difficult. I have a few gold positions in our stock account, but if they don't start working next week, I'm tempted to get out. But I will say this. It looks like we had an exhaustive sell-off in gold. Okay, so I think that we might see a bounce now next week in it. But from a money management point of view, you don't put all your stuff in one thing or just a few things. Spread it out. Buy some gold, maybe buy a gold ETF, but maybe not more than 5% of your portfolio, your overall portfolio. So that if something really disastrous happens, it doesn't affect you too much. If something really nice happens, okay, well, it won't affect you that much either. But at least you're trying to manage the risk, okay? And your gold ETFs are out there, so you can buy a gold ETF if you're talking about your IRA. If you're talking about your 401k, if they allow you to exit the mutual fund choices they give you and go buy individual ETFs or stocks, which a lot of them do these days, then you can do that through your 401k. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. New home sales came out today. They were the slowest pace in 7 months. Slowest pace. These are new home sales, okay, and that's according to the data released out this morning. They fell 6.8% last month to 482,000 new homes. They expected about 550,000. Okay, so it's pretty big disappointment. But they also said the government statistics are always wrong, everybody. They also said there's a large error factor, plus or minus about 12.5%. So don't get, this may change. You never know. And just to put it a little bit in perspective, was it better than last year at this time or worse than last year? Well, it's up 18% from a year ago for the month. So it is stronger than it was. Now, also, I want to remind you that the existing home sales report that came out, was it last week, was much stronger than expected. This is the new house report for new construction was weaker than expected. So, I don't know. The home builders seem to be upbeat. They're pretty confident. And permits were pretty strong. Last week, remember the permits for building a new house? That was pretty strong. So, who knows? Maybe because interest rates rose, there's a little fall in the housing market. I think Justin is more negative on housing than I am. I think it's just a short-term issue. Yes, rising interest rates, mortgage rates has had an effect, but I don't know how much. We won't know. It's 1 month doesn't tell us a lot. There is time. If you want to get a question in, you have time. You can do it right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me at 888-99-CHART. I'll do my best to answer your question here on Invest Talk.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. What's your biggest challenge managing your money? Why not talk to Steve about it? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number, or you can get a note directly to a financial advisor about it, and they will respond. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
Let's get another question in before the end of the hour. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Robert called from Hemet, California, with this question.
Hey, a quick question, kind of a general. Is there a economic environment where junk bonds do better than others?
Yes. In a very strong economy, junk bonds usually do much better than a recession. In a recession, junk bonds collapse. Why they collapse is because they're junk. Corporate earnings go down. So coming out of a recession and a strong economy, junk bonds do much better. Junk bonds generally turn down, and if you notice JNK, which is the junk bond ETF, you'll notice that junk bonds have fallen all this year, and they look like they bottomed in our 10% correction in December, and now they recovered back until about late February, early March, and since then they've been falling ever since. So the junk bond market is trying to tell us something here. And it's telling us probably that's worried about corporate earnings. Now, we've had not the greatest corporate earnings, even though they beat expectations. They've been fairly weak. See, and remember, the companies that issue junk bonds are weak in themselves, and that's why they're called junk. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to pay it, but junk bonds have a very high default rate in recessions. And right now, you're not getting rewarded for the risks people are taking. And I would never buy a junk bond at this point because it's not enough reward. The interest rates aren't high enough. They're super low because of the Fed raising low in rates. And when interest rates start to rise, generally, you know, generally junk bonds will go down in value because they're going to be raising their rates. So to answer your question, they usually do best coming out of recession and when the economy is starting to get a lot of strength. It's not just at the bottom, but after it's very evident that the economy is recovering. That's when junk bonds usually are the best because they're paying pretty high rates at that point. As you know, to attract people, they have to, when in a recession, to attract people to buy a junk bond, you got to pay a high interest rate. So then once the economy is recovering, their interest rates start to come down because it's more assured that they're going to pay. And that's what I'm thinking. Will this commodity crisis infect stocks? There's been in the news everywhere. Everybody's talking about, oh, gold and oil, everything's falling, silver, copper. Oh, no, you know, the market's going to crash. So is that true? Now, in 2008, it was true. Excuse me. The market went down, so did the commodities. Crashed with them. But let's go back to 1970 and take a look at all the bear markets since then. The 1980 to 82 did that market, bear market, which is 20% or more down in the S&P 500. Did commodities decline? They did. In 1980 to 82, the S&P and commodities declined together. 1984 to 86, S&P rose while commodities fell. 1997 to 98, the S&P rose while commodities fell. 2008-2009, the S&P and commodities declined together. So, twice together, twice not together in bear markets. So, what's your conclusion? Your conclusion is you can't say just because commodity prices are falling that the stock market's going to follow. We don't know. It's a coin toss. So, try not to get too, caught up in all the news. Remember, all the news outlets are just trying to get you to read their stuff. That's how they operate. That's what they want. They want viewership, readership. They're not necessarily selling you good information or showing you good information. They're showing you information that is sensational. They're trying to get your attention. So you, as an investor, need to step back a little bit and say, okay, well, what's the real facts? And the real facts is, there's really not much correlation. We don't know. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. We're out of time for today. My reminder, I will be in San Jose August 4th for individual portfolio reviews. There are first come, first serve appointments there. I am filling up. So to save your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening today. Enjoy your weekend, and let's start it up again Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.